Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, he's on the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Close the interception.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also chime in via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Some news on the Pro Bowl front. There's now four representatives in the game from the New York Giants, so we'll get into that. Two named yesterday. We'll give you an opportunity to reflect on that. If you have somebody else that you think on this team deserved an opportunity, we'll also field those questions and those comments on that topic. We'll get into the draft, get into the Senior Bowl. Certainly a number of things to hit on over the next 60 minutes. This is going to be a busy week. You got the Senior Bowl, you got the Pro Bowl, and also you have the Broncos and the Panthers preparing for Super Bowl 50, which will be a week from this weekend. So we'll certainly tackle a number of the topics. We'll get to your phone calls, we'll get to your tweets. But Anita, let's start with some of the Giants news, and that is Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and Josh Brown, the latest two players that are heading to the Pro Bowl, replacements for two New England Patriots. DRC is going to replace Malcolm Butler, and then you have Josh Brown replacing Steven Gostkowski. I was looking through the numbers and the stats, previous Pro Bowl appearances and so forth. I was very surprised that this is going to be Josh Brown's first Pro Bowl appearance in 13 seasons. And you look at his numbers, he was with the Seahawks, he was with the Rams, he's had a number of seasons over 100 points and so forth. I would have thought he would have had at least one appearance, so that's actually quite a surprise. This is going to be his first nod to get to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, you would think so, but Gostkowski, dude needs a hug, right? I mean, unbelievable, and really kind of took the brunt in regard to that Patriots loss, because it's everything's easier, obviously, in hindsight when you could sit here and say, well, wow, if he would have made that extra point, then all the Patriots would have had to do is make another extra point, and then that game could have gone into overtime, and who knows what would have happened then. But that's got to be tough, and to end your season on that, I think this is going to be a long season for him. But let's face it, I mean, he's money. I want to say, what is it, over 523, I think, are consecutive, right, extra points that he had made up until that point. I mean, that's just, his numbers are really insane. So you know, I think it's tough. I think when you've got field goal kickers such as Gostkowski, who are that good, I think it's hard to get in if you're another field goal kicker in the league.
Oh, Dan Bailey's the other representative from the Dallas Cowboys. So, you know, they normally do select two kickers. You're right. I mean, there's been one guy in particular that's been very consistent, so it makes it very difficult. I was just looking over Josh Brown even earlier in his career, before Gostkowski was a household name for the New England Patriots. I was surprised that, you know, he hadn't gotten a nod or at least been an alternate that was named to the team. But he had a lot of turnover this season in terms of the Pro Bowl invites. I was looking at a statistic. I think ESPN threw this out, Anita.
They've been through
133 Pro Bowl selections.
And so
that's remarkable.
Right. And this is the largest in history. Before it was 119 in 2009. And here's the question. And I want to throw this out to our viewers as well. And that is, how big is the Pro Bowl? Like, I don't watch. Like, maybe, you know, I'll have it on in the background. But am I planning a party? Like, you know what I mean? Am I making the dip and ordering the case of wine and inviting the friends over? No.
It's an exhibition all-star type of game.
So if it's not exciting for us, I understand what, you know, what an honor, what a privilege, how flattering it is, to be voted to the Pro Bowl and to be looked at by the fans and by your peers and the coaches and what have you. But I mean, 133, Lance, it makes me wonder how significant of an honor is this for present day players any longer?
Well, I think a lot of players, especially those that are in the postseason, if they get banged up in the game before the Pro Bowl, they're not going to play. I mean, they're probably exhausted mentally and physically, so they just don't look at it as a big opportunity. Whereas a player who, you know, didn't get to the postseason now has an opportunity to go out, finish out the season strongly, I think maybe looks forward to it a little bit more. I think you hit on an interesting note, and I'll throw out another question and comment too. the listeners and the viewers, when you look at a resume for a player, and this is a topic that's come up time and time again because of the fact that you could argue, well, maybe the Pro Bowl doesn't hold nearly as much substance, because if you go through 133 players and you're getting to the fourth and fifth alternate, Anita, at every position, you say to yourself, well, is that the true reflection of how good your season was? Is it Pro Bowl or all pro nod? When you look at the resume of a player, and you say, this player deserves to get recognition because he was a five-time All-Pro selection as opposed to he was a seven-time Pro Bowler, you know, what do you think holds more water? I would lean towards All-Pro. I think that when you compare players and you say to yourself, you know, what exactly are you looking for in the resume, I tend to steer towards All-Pro selection more so than Pro Bowl, given the fact that over the last few years specifically, we've seen so much turnover where the players that actually are worthy of getting into the Pro Bowl wind up missing the game because of injuries or a variety of different reasons, and then you get to the third, the fourth, the alternate. And this is nothing against the Giants that are going. I mean, there's a number of Giants that deserve to go in. Eli Manning, DRC, Josh Brown, I mean, certainly had great seasons. But I think that when you get that low down on the totem pole, that low down on the depth chart, I think it says something about who's getting Pro Bowl nods as opposed to who makes the All-Pro.
So I'm going to give you the list of quarterbacks that are going to be in the Pro Bowl, okay? Derek Carr. Eli Manning, Tyrod Taylor, Teddy Bridgewater, and Jameis Winston.
Well, there you go. Not necessarily the top five that you would name in terms of production for this season. Forget the name and whether it's a household name.
Besides Eli Manning, I mean, I've been saying this all season long. Like, regardless, I get that the Giants didn't have a great season. I get that they didn't go to the postseason. But I feel that this was Eli Manning's best year. I mean, you know, what he was able to do with what he was working with, and I was just so. This isn't a knock on Eli in any stretch of the imagination, but Tyrod Taylor, Teddy Bridgewater, Jameis Winston, these aren't names that are going to make me tune in to watch this game.
Well, I think that says it all. I mean, when you're getting to the Tyrod Taylors and the Teddy Bridgewaters, and you know, the Vikings' passing offense was 31st this season. So it just goes to show you he's not necessarily a guy that lit it up from a statistical standpoint. And Tyrod Taylor also missed time. He was banged up this season. When you're getting to that level where you have to select these type of players, I think that says a lot about, once again, what do you feel holds more water? All-Pro versus Pro Bowl. So, I mean, that's something that I think people need to at least put in perspective when they look at what a player's resume is all about.
Russell Wilson, by the way, is the only player who was voted in the first round voted in who's still on the roster. So I did leave him off, Russell Wilson. But, of course, Cam Newton's not going to be there. We know where he's going to be.
That's understandable. Right? I think he's got a legitimate excuse.
Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Carson Palmer, Andy Dalton, Philip Rivers, Drew Brees. These guys won't be there.
Now, a number of the players that you just threw out, they have legitimate injuries, so I can't fault them. I mean, Andy Dalton's got the finger injury. You know, that obviously was going to prevent him from playing, so that's not necessarily a surprise. It's when the guy doesn't necessarily have an injury, or maybe he has something else that came out last second, you wonder, you know, hey, you do want some substance in this game. But it did open the door for a number of Giants, just to bring it back to the team perspective. And, you know, Josh Brown, who had a career high in points this season, was also money. You mentioned Steven Gaskowski. Until late in the season, Josh Brown was very consistent. This was one of his best statistical seasons. And then DRC was a very opportunistic player this season. When you look at the defense this year, Anita, and you're looking for, you know, X factors, game-changing type of plays, game-changing type of players, I mean, DRC's essentially at the top of the list. I put Jasper Brinkley up there, too. I think he did a nice job with his playing time. But, you know, DRC had two touchdown returns this season and was all over the football. The problem was this season, sometimes injuries prevented him from obviously staying in a game for its duration.
Absolutely. I've said this before. I feel that Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie was the MVP of this offense, this defense this season. Hands down. I thought Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie was the best player on this defense this season.
No argument there. I think that he took advantage of his opportunities. He was a ball hawk. I mean, he was all over the place. You could point to a number of games this year where DRC took advantage, was in the right spot, and then all of a sudden changed field position for the Giants offense or was able to put points on the board. And that's what you want. You look at Carolina and you look at Denver, Anita, just to build a parallel to, you know, the Giants defense this year. The Broncos defense and the Panthers defense put points on the board. You know, that's to me what stands out about these two units. And when your defense can go out there and give you 7 points, give you a touchdown and a field goal thanks to field position, I mean, think about the amount of pressure that that takes off of your offense. And Denver's offense and Carolina's offense were up there this year in terms of the statistical rankings, but Carolina was number one in takeaways. And the Giants were up there, too. You know, that's another thing that shouldn't be overlooked. The difference is Carolina took a huge advantage on those takeaways by then turning them into points, and the Giants didn't necessarily do the same. It's one thing to get the takeaways. It's another thing, though, to all of a sudden capitalize on those takeaways, and that was the biggest difference if you at least look at what Carolina did versus what the Giants did this season.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and another thing is, and just to go back to Eli Manning and the pressure that was definitely placed on him in this offense, knowing that they needed a certain it's interesting. A few times I'd have conversations with Paul Dottino, and Paul, the first thing Paul would say is, all right, I looked at film. I've totally dissected this matchup. The Giants need to score 32 points in order to win this week. I'm like, Paul, what? And I just feel like each and every week he would come into our conversation. I'd first see him on Wednesday.
With a mathematical equation.
Yes, and he'd come in and he'd say, okay, the Giants need to score 21 points this week to win. Like, and that's how he would assess the situation. And this is Paul Dottino. Imagine Eli Manning. You know, he's probably, I mean, just the pressure of knowing that you had to put so many points on the board in order to give the Giants an opportunity to win. Pretty unbelievable.
And that's why balance, it goes without saying, is such an important element to the National Football League. And you look at the two teams that are in the Super Bowl this year, balance. I mean, that's what these two teams scream out. Carolina did it offensively. They got it done defensively, special teams with Ted Ginn. And Denver, you can argue the same thing. I mean, they dealt with some injuries at the quarterback position, but for the most part, you know, their defense kept them within games, even when their offense fell off a little bit later in the year, whether it was Manning with the turnovers or Brock Osweiler, you know, struggling because obviously he was still a young, unproven quarterback. They still managed to have one facet of the team make up for the other shortcomings. So that was clearly an important aspect that you see out of both of these teams. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can't get to the phone, reach out to us on Twitter, #GiantsChat. We're going over the Pro Bowl selections for the New York Giants. Four players are going to be in the Pro Bowl, talking about some issues and some developments in terms of Super Bowl 50, as well as you wanting to weigh in on the draft, as well as free agency that's going to be here before you know it and how that impacts the Giants. We also want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. We'll also be obviously weighing in on a variety of different other topics as we move along here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, and we'll be getting to your phone calls in a little bit. But in terms of the Pro Bowl, we mentioned DRC, we mentioned Josh Brown. Eli Manning was also named to the Pro Bowl earlier this week, and you know, out of the quarterbacks that you threw out, Anita, you know, Eli, you mentioned you felt this was his best statistical season, and I think if you do a comparison to other seasons, it's hard to argue that point, especially with a career high in touchdown passes, 35. He also set a career high in passer rating, franchise marks in completions as well as pass attempts, and even if you look at some of his individual games this season, Nita, that stood out. I think of the Saints game, where he threw 6 touchdown passes. And let's not forget the Miami game, which was by far his most efficient, accurate game, I would say, in his entire career.
Yeah, and, you know, going into the season, I mean, we talked about the injuries that the offensive line was dealing with. All the shuffling around was pretty difficult. And I think you really got to commend Eli for really playing hard, playing strong. There were a few games that he got pretty beat up, stood up, got back in that huddle. You know, we like to call him the Iron Man because, you know, he doesn't miss games because of injury. And how quickly he did get the ball off. I mean, if you go back and you look at the amount of time, or really, let's call it for what it is, the amount of seconds that he had to really get the ball off, it was quite quick. So, and also, without a sufficient rushing attack, for the majority of the season. I mean, we really did not see the Giants have success in the rushing game until the last 3 or 4 games of the season. So he was able to put up those numbers and do all of that with, of course, Odell Beckham Jr., which every quarterback has to absolutely love to play with him. But after Odell, there was a big drop off in talent. And then kind of a lot of question marks with the offensive line, and without a solid rushing attack that's going to keep defenses honest. So you compile and you look at all that, and it really, really is impressive what Eli was able to do this year. It really was.
It's interesting because Eli Manning often gets compared, Anita, to Philip Rivers and Ben Roethlisberger, considering all three came in the same draft class. And I'm looking at the fact that late in their careers, the common trait that all three of these quarterbacks have in common is they changed offensive coordinators. So they had to sort of redefine themselves as quarterbacks. And more often than not, you know, when you get to the latter stages of your career and you get up there, adjustment at the quarterback position is not the easiest thing to do. And you look at Ben Roethlisberger, who, you know, changed offensive coordinators working with Todd Haley. I mean, that obviously was a change for him. Philip Rivers went to Ken Whisenhunt and also had a new offensive coordinator this year. Now he's going to go back to Ken Whisenhunt. And then obviously with respect to Eli Manning going from Kevin Gilbride to Ben McAdoo. So, you know, all three of them who get stacked up against one another side to side, given the fact that they came in the same draft class and are well decorated. It's interesting how all three successfully, I would argue for the most part, were able to adapt to new offenses.
Yeah, but also, you know, you got to keep in mind, you know, when you do have a new offensive coordinator who comes in, especially quarterbacks that you know that Philip Rivers is the face of that franchise. You know Ben Roethlisberger is the face. You're not sitting there going, you know, it's not one of these, like, in my opinion, like this Ryan Tannehill situation in Miami. I think a big reason why the Dolphins went out and brought in Adam Gase is, listen, this is our last hurrah. If Adam Gase can't get Tannehill into that upper echelon area of what a quarterback needs to be in the NFL, then I think the Dolphins are going to plan on a different strategy in regards to who their quarterback is moving forward. So, but you know, you bring in an offensive coordinator with a quarterback of the stature of Ben Roethlisberger, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning. I think there's a responsibility to say, okay, you know, what does this guy do well? We're going to change this offense up. So my point is, Ben McAdoo came over with his style of offense that he brought in from Green Bay, but realized, listen, you know, Eli Manning is a much different quarterback than Aaron Rodgers. So we're going to tweak this and we're going to tweak that. So it is the same offense, but we're going to tweak it that it's going to benefit what Eli Manning brings to the table. And I think that's important. I think that's something that you did see with all the offensive coordinators who came in and made that switch with all three of the quarterbacks.
Well, the other challenge and the other part of that equation is just learning the new jargon. Now, obviously, any offensive coordinator should mold the offensive system around the strengths and weaknesses of the signal caller. But I think the fact that sometimes when you're so used to the language and the operation of the system. I mean, think about how long Eli Manning worked with Kevin Gilbride and also Ben Roethlisberger and Philip Rivers with their respective coordinators. Now, all of a sudden, you know, when you get into your 30s and you're well-established, now you got to sort of reinvent yourself and learn an entire new language. And even Eli Manning admitted that. You know, it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do, even when you're viewed as a well-established quarterback and so forth. So that, to me, is an interesting trend when you compare all three of those quarterbacks. And Ben McAdoo certainly is a big contributing factor as to why Eli Manning has had back-to-back career years, I would argue, because his numbers were very impressive also in 2014 as well, the first year with McAdoo. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines. We'll get to your tweets as well. Hashtag Giants Chat, 201-939-4513. She's Anita Marks. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us for Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, focusing on the Pro Bowl as well as a variety of other topics. Scott is in D.C. Scott, what's happening?
Hey, good day to you. Two quick questions. The first one is, do you know how many times the NFL has punished ODB in his career of under 2 years?
What do you mean punished? You mean like fined?
Fined or suspended.
Well, he was only suspended once. I mean, I could tell you that. And that was this
right,
past
I'm
season.
Asking about the total number of times he's been fined or
four.
Suspended.
He's been fined four times.
Okay, and last week, John was saying that the head coach doesn't really teach the skills for the players. Instead, that was a function of the assistant coaches on the staff. I'm pretty sure that you all gave the former head coach all the credit for curing Tiki Barber's fumbling problem, but if the head coach doesn't teach the skills, who is it that deserves credit for for fixing Tiki Barber's fumbling problem?
Well, I think it's a combination of a variety of factors. I think the head coach certainly is a contributing factor in addition
to
the assistants.
Didn't he have to walk around with a football?
Well, I mean, I'm sure there were a variety of things that Tom Coughlin had
Tiki
Barber
do. Didn't he have
to walk
around with a football, like guys were like trying to like
in the hallways and in the locker room? Yes, that was certainly one of the
sleep with it,
parts
shower
of the process.
With it.
Yes, but Scott, to answer your question, I mean, I would credit the head coach as well as the assistants. I think it's a group effort. I don't think you could pinpoint it on one individual as a whole. It's the same thing with the running back position as to why the running game got going. You'd say it's the job of the running back's coach to know which running back has a better feel during the course of a game, in addition to the head coach saying, hey, we got to stick with one guy.
All right, great. Thanks a lot. Bye.
All right, Scott. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513.
Some random interesting questions.
Yes, very interesting questions.
He threw out
about how many fines Odell Beckham has had. I don't know how necessarily that helps in terms of moving forward.
Which,
but,
by the way, set your DVRs tonight for Code Black.
That's right.
Right?
Well, wait, is that today or is that? I think that's a few weeks away, if I'm correct.
Is it? I think it's tonight.
Is it tonight?
I read
no, you
February
could be
10th
correct.
When he
you
plays.
Could be correct.
I mean, yeah, it's February 10th.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Okay,
February 10th, so we got a few weeks there.
Oh, I
you
jumped,
can set your DVR now.
I jumped the gun.
Yes,
I jumped
but
the gun. But
don't,
set your
don't anticipate watching it until middle of February.
So this is pretty cool. If you haven't heard, Odell Beckham Jr. is going to play himself in a guest spot on CBS's medical drama called Code Black. Apparently, Bo Bridges plays his high school football coach who goes into the emergency room and needs to have a procedure done, and I guess Odell walks in to talk him into doing it. So I'm pretty excited. I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, he's certainly a popular
name. Have you seen
name.
The show? It's actually a really good show.
I do not watch that show. I can't say I do.
Okay.
So.
What shows do you watch, Lance? I'm curious.
I'm a movie guy. I'm more of a movie guy.
What's on Lance Meadows? What's your
what's
like
on
DVR?
The DVR?
Yeah, what's your DVR?
I love The Blacklist. That's probably far my favorite.
It's great.
Show.
It's great.
Yes, and I also
is he her dad? Do you think he's her dad?
Well, I think there's some type of connection. I don't know. I have a few different thoughts as to where the thing could go. Could be a family member of some sort, not necessarily a father. Could be
but what
a
do you think? So you don't think he's her father? I think he is. I think he is her father.
I mean, I think.
Or is that just too obvious for? Because
part of me, with the way
they try
this show,
to play that
yeah,
up.
With the way this show is going, I would think that would be too obvious of an answer.
Have you seen Billions yet?
No, I have not seen that.
Awesome.
That's a good program as well.
Awesome.
Okay. I will take notes of that. There's only so much I can handle during.
Do you
the
watch
of
Game
week.
Of Thrones?
No, I never got into that.
Wow.
HBO was more of a Sopranos guy.
Yeah.
That was my show that I turned to. And Entourage, those were the two. Other than that, haven't really gotten into too many HBO shows. But nothing at this point tops The Blacklist, in my opinion. That's on television right now. Once again, I have not necessarily seen every show, but it's going to be hard for you to
American
convince
Crime?
Me that something's
American
better.
Crime?
The ABC show did not get into that.
It's great. Okay.
I heard good things. No, I did hear good things about that.
I know we've derailed.
You're batting 1,000 here.
I was curious, and I'm sure there are some other people out there that are curious. Like, what does Lance watch?
Oh,
like,
absolutely. They lose sleep at night not knowing what television
what's
program.
What's your go-to?
I told you. That's my go-to. So now society can relax. They can rest easy knowing that is my go-to program. Let's check it on Twitter as we'll continue to also check it on the phones at 201-939-4513. A number of people weighing in on Twitter. So let's take a look at some of the questions
on TV
and
shows?
Some of the comments. No, not TV show. If you do want to weigh in, certainly. I mean, Anita clearly has a laundry list of programs. So you want to name it NBC?
X-Files just
already,
started again?
It just started. Already you watched the show?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
What do you
Unbelievable.
Mean?
One program in and she's already into it. Goodness gracious. All right. Let's take a look at some of the football-related questions right now, though I'm sure somebody will weigh in on television. Well, maybe break down movies, too. I could tell you a few movies in my Netflix account that I watched recently. I'm sure the audience will be very interested to hear that.
Making a Murder?
Juan at Juni1078 mentioned about DRC, and this is certainly a big part of the narrative for him this season. However, I would argue this shouldn't overshadow his play. He did have a number of drops in terms of pick sixes, which could have very well changed at least the flow of a game. To say that, DRC gets a touchdown in the Redskins game, let's use that as an example, and all of a sudden that's an automatic win, I wouldn't go that far. But there were some missed opportunities by DRC this season. The Vikings game is another one, and that's a part of the narrative this year. But I think if you look at the number of plays that he did make, Anita, he made a lot more plays than he didn't make. If you at least balance out the numbers.
And also, keep this in mind, okay? A lot of times, secondary players have a lot of success because their front four, or front seven are getting such a great pass rush on the opposing quarterbacks. And not for this to come out as a knock on our defensive line, but let's face it. I mean, you know, they really weren't applying the pressure that often. So now what happens? So now Prince and DRC and the secondary guys, now they have to cover a lot longer than, you know what I mean? I mean, so again, it just goes, in my opinion, it goes to show you, like, I think what a great season he had because, you know, chances are there was a lot more time, there were a lot more seconds that he had to cover somebody and make a play on a ball than maybe if he played for, you know, a team like the Denver Broncos or the Carolina Panthers. You know what I mean? Like, and not to say that, oh, it's so easy for Josh Norman, but listen, when you've got a defensive line like the Panthers do coming at you and a quarterback only has 2 seconds, if three, and he's throwing off his back foot, and yeah, then there's more opportunity to make interceptions and pick sixes and deflections for DBs. That wasn't the case here. So I think you really have to commend Dominic Rogers-Cromartie.
Well, as I mentioned, game-changing plays. I put him and Jasper Brinkley at the top of the list. Jasper Brinkley was very good at forcing fumbles, recovering fumbles, if you're at least to pinpoint specific individuals on defense. The other thing that I think is important to note about the defense this season, and this is not an excuse. Listen, the numbers are the numbers. The defense struggled. Nobody's going to argue that. The numbers speak for themselves. But what hurt, I think, because you were talking about how the pass rush complements the secondary and vice versa, because of all the injuries, just think about the variety of personnel groupings that were in and out of games, I would even argue, during the course of this season. You know, DRC was in and out of games. It led to Tremaine McBride and Trevin Wade coming in, and all of a sudden the quarterback takes advantage of these last-second changes. But think about the movement at safety and the fact that the two corners didn't really play with the same group of safeties during the course of this season. I mean, that's also something that if you look at the Broncos, you look at the Panthers, who have had stability at those positions, you know, communication, I think, and knowing the tendencies of your teammates is something that can easily get overlooked when you look at how a defense performs. But, you know, that was something that certainly impacted the Giants' defense this season. The personnel groupings were not consistent enough this year, where DRC knew, hey, I'm playing next to Cooper Taylor all 16 games. So right. I know where he's going to be just about every single play and so forth, and Prince could say the same thing. You couldn't do that. That was not a benefit, not a luxury that the Giants secondary had this season.
Absolutely. I mean, all four of those players, when you're talking about your two starting corners and your free and strong safety, all four of them need to be on the same page, and it takes time for that to gel and develop and really be in unison. That you're absolutely right. That didn't happen. Another thing is, and Paul Dottino talks about this all the time, and that is Spags.
Paul's been talking a lot lately to you, apparently. I don't know if that's a good thing, but anyway, yes.
So far, I mean, he's the one person I talk to about the Giants
well,
the most.
The more time you enjoy spending with him, more power to you. That's all I'll say.
So, but one thing that he does, and he communicates on this show, and that is the way that Spags defense, the way that it operates, you know, yes, his middle linebacker has to be that you know, that communicate, he's wearing the communication device, but in Spags' defense, typically it's the safety.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was Landon Collins. So imagine that, like, you know, now you've got a defensive coordinator who's probably most important player on the field is his strong safety, who is really Landon Collins and is a rookie. So, and there's a learning curve there, there's highs and lows. So keep that in mind as well, that, you know, I think it was a very interesting and challenging year for the secondary as a whole. And again, to see what Dominic Rogers-Cromartie was able to do, I think was pretty impressive.
Well, and Spags emphasized that right before the season started. He said safety is a very important position because, remember, the big storyline entering this season was a lot of young safeties, a lot of question marks, no Antrel role anymore, who's going to fill the void there. And that's why Spags said, hey, we got to get the most out of these safeties here in the preseason so we know what we're working with. And moving ahead now, looking ahead to free agency, as a lot of people have weighed in over the last few days, the reason why it's important to target perhaps a veteran safety to complement Landon Collins is because of what you just touched on and what we've been emphasizing. If the safety position is so important in Spags' defense, right now I think it's important to have that veteran to be the complementary piece to Landon Collins. So you have a guy that's going to be that captain on the back end of the defense. He's polished. He's experienced. He can come in. He'll know the system, and he'll also be able to provide that security blanket for the other younger secondary players around him. I think that's a big reason why perhaps they struggled at points on the back end, in addition to obviously a number of other factors. But you need, in Spags' defense, you need that captain. You need that Antonio Pierce, who was that middle linebacker in the first stint with Spags. You need now that type of personality in that safety position for this defense. Let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. You want to weigh in on the Pro Bowl. You want to weigh in on the draft, free agency. You want to weigh in on your favorite TV show. We'll also get into that. Blind Spot's another one, by the way. That's a favorite of mine on NBC. You can tell the NBC theme here. Dave is
nothing,
in Florida.
Nothing Dave. In Netflix. Nothing like Narcos.
Well, not Netflix shows. More Netflix movies. Dave, what's happening?
Hi, I think you just answered my question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Sure.
What does Ben McAdoo plan to do specifically about improving the defense? Do you think that they're going to keep the same core and just work with that and just add some more pieces, or are they going to just stick with what they have and then and take it from there? What do you think Ben McAdoo's plan is?
Well, I would expect some turnover in terms of the roster. I think it goes without saying, mainly because, remember, the core that you're referring to, Dave, there's a number of free agents in that core. So there's no guarantee that everybody's going to come back. I mean, they do have a number of flexibility in terms of the cap space, but I would anticipate that they're going to look to improve a unit that was battling injuries throughout the course of this past season, and certainly you can use a little bit more experience, as we just talked about, on the back end of the defense. Are they going to have the financial flexibility to go after that in free agency and then obviously fill any remaining voids through the draft? To me, JPP, Robert Ayers, and Prince Amukamara are the three parts of the core that you just touched on that you at least want to weigh the worthiness of bringing them back versus if we lose them, do we have enough talent out there to replace them? I mean, those are three important players that I think certainly provided some momentum on defense this season. After that, I think there's certainly room and flexibility to bring in some new faces to bolster the depth chart. All right, Dave.
Okay, I think that's adding Cromartie also.
Well, Cromartie's on the books already. You don't have to worry about him.
Oh, you're talking about, free agent.
Well, I'm talking about free agent. I mean, DRC's under contract. So, I mean, there's no question mark with respect to him. The three players I threw out prior, they're free agents. So, I mean, right now you could pencil them in your plans, but who knows how the market's going to play out.
Is there anybody good out there that the Giants, you think, that they can aim at trying to acquire? That's a free agent that's, just make a big difference for the defense?
Well, I mean, there's two players that, we've talked about on previous shows, and obviously these are fairly household names, but, who knows how the market's going to play out. Von Miller, who's on the Denver Broncos, Dave, he's a notable free agent, and he certainly is a player that has a knack to get to the quarterback, which the Giants can use. And on top of that, Eric Berry from the Kansas City Chiefs is an established safety. I mean, those are the two players that I would put at the top of the list because of the way they've produced and also the fact that they're established veterans. And I think, obviously, because of the Giants' financial flexibility, they wouldn't be out of the running. But then again, I don't know what those two players are thinking. I don't know what their priorities are.
Here is a list of some
others.
Of the here's a list of some of the top unrestricted free agents heading into this season. So you tell me who tickles your fancy there.
Well, the two names I just threw out that are on the list, Eric Berry and Von Miller, and this is off of NFL.com. So is this the ranking? Is this the order
this
of how
their,
high
is,
they rank
yes,
them?
This is their ranking.
This is their ranking. So
yeah.
Von Miller's number one. And Dave, by the way, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Eric Berry is number 7. JPP, by the way, is number 6. Now, they also have offensive players on this list. It's important to note that, too.
Yeah.
But the first three are defensive players. Von Miller, Josh Norman of the Carolina Panthers, and then Muhammad Wilkerson, who's another interesting name, the local product for the New York Jets, who also a guy that can get to the quarterback, part of the defensive line. So Muhammad Wilkerson and Von Miller, if you're the Giants, let's say, and you're looking to obviously beef up the defensive line, depending on what happens with Robert Ayers and JPP, Von Miller and Muhammad Wilkerson are clearly the top two targets, I think, in this free agent class.
Malik Jackson was so impressive, by the way, in that game against the Patriots. Wow. he really got to Tom Brady.
You look at the rest of the list. Alshon Jeffrey, Bears wide receiver, is on the list. An offensive player, Doug Martin, the Bucks running back, who really turned things around. Sam Bradford, Kirk Cousins, Matt Forte. A lot of offensive players after that. The other player we should note from a defensive standpoint, Denver's going to have some tough decisions to make, by the way.
Oh, yeah, they
Danny
are.
Trevathan,
They've
who's been a solid linebacker.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one thing to have that group of defensive players together. It's another thing to try to keep all of them. Von Miller, Danny Trevathan, two key players, part of that defense that are going to hit the market if Denver doesn't lock them up. So those are two players, obviously coming from a very opportunistic group to watch. But I hope that that answers your question, Dave, as to, you know, the type of impactful players that are going to be out on the market that, you know, the Giants as well as a number of other teams are going to have a chance to bring in. But it will be very interesting to see with respect to the core what the Giants determine they want to do. And as I mentioned, I think the three key components on defense that are set to hit free agency, Robert Ayers, JPP, and Prince Amukamara. You know, those are the tough three decisions that the Giants are going to have to make. And when you look at those three players, Anita, there are two things in my mind that you have to weigh. Number one, if we lose that player, can we bring in a player of equal level of production or more level of production? Because remember, the goal is you don't want to downgrade. You want to make sure if we let this guy walk and we can't bring him back, we're definitely going to bring in another guy that's going to provide some consistency there. You have to at least weigh that when you decide the pros and cons. A number of people are going to certainly throw in the injury aspect in all of this. You know, Prince has dealt with some injuries. JPP's dealt with some injuries. You know, clearly, if you look at how this season played out, you know, you want guys that are going to be able to stay healthy and be out on the field. So those are the other aspects of the equation that you need to weigh. But I think it's very important before you say, hey, you know, we think we could get somebody of equal or better value. And I'm talking about production. Forget the finances. You got to make sure that you have a legitimate shot of bringing in that player, because the last thing you want to do is, you know, cut ties with the player. And then all of a sudden, nobody else is on the market that could fill that void.
No, absolutely. And one thing, you know, that we've seen what the Giants have done in the past is that they have a certain number for each player. And what's really going to be interesting is what does that market bear for those players? You know, I would assume, I know what happens when you assume, but I think it's safe to assume that whatever deals come JPP's way, it's going to be incentive-based. Because let's face it, you really don't know. You saw what you got with him with the club that he was wearing. Obviously, he just had surgery. Hopefully, that goes well. Hopefully, he can wear something else that allows him to grip better than we saw him really being unable to grip this year.
Which is the goal following the latest surgery.
So, you know, but there's so many question marks there, you know. And then when it comes to Prince, we're sitting here, we've been talking about Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie for 5-10 minutes. You know, are you going to go out what's the market? At the end of the day, what's the market going to bear for these guys? And we know that the Giants have a price tag, and we know that, you know, they're not going to overpay. It's not what the Giants do.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Jamal is in D.C. Jamal, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Doing well, Jamal. How's everything with you?
Doing well. I just wanted to address the running game. I know in the past we had a running game by committee and Ward and Brandon Jacobs. And
Bradshaw, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, and that went pretty well, you know, for a little while. But, you know, at this time, you know, it doesn't really work for us. So I guess my question is there anybody in free agency, you know, worth getting? Or do you think we could possibly get a running back, say, maybe the second or third round that's ready to, you know, take some hands off versus, you know, fall into the back with the rest of the running backs. The committee thing that haven't worked out the last two seasons. I mean, Rashad Dennis showed some promise for the end of the season, though, but, you know, overall, we just lack real consistency. I feel like, you know, Eli could have had an even better year, you know, with a decent running game, but we had zero running game this season.
Well, I think part of that was obviously, you know, the fullback not necessarily being involved earlier in the season, offensive line injuries. I think there were a number of factors that played a role as to why the running game didn't get going early as opposed to later, as opposed to just saying it was perhaps a personnel issue with respect to the running backs. If you look at the priorities this offseason, Jamal, I would say running back is low on the list in terms of needing playmakers and needing personnel upgrades. I think that they have a number of guys under contract. They brought in Shane Vereen last offseason. You have Jennings. You know, Andre Williams was drafted recently. I look at defense. I look at perhaps, you know, the wide receiver position, maybe bringing in an offensive lineman to add some more depth, much more so of a priority than the running back position in terms of the laundry list of things.
Makes sense.
All right, Jamal. Well, appreciate the phone call.
Yeah,
thanks so much for weighing in.
I made a comment last week, and somebody on Twitter had disagreed with me that I feel that I was quite happy with what we have in that backfield.
No, I don't think that's an issue. I mean, especially when you need to look at other areas that you want to upgrade.
You know, I mean, keep in mind, Shane Vereen just joined the team last year, and when this offensive line, when the Giants' offensive line were able to really come together and perform well, you saw the success that Rashad Jennings was able to really do. Also, another thing, and I think this is really interesting, and we talked about this all season long, and that is, you know, I felt that when McAdoo gave Rashad Jennings those 15, 19, 20, 22 carries per game to allow that running back to kind of get into that flow, I think that's when you saw it change as well. But it's a debate out there. There are a few people who say, oh, that's not necessary. You know, you could have a 2-3. Heck, at one point in time, there were a few games that the Giants had a four-headed monster with Darqua back there. But so, I think it's an interesting debate and an interesting argument to have that, you know, do running backs find that they are more successful when they are carrying the ball a certain number of times, whether it's 15 to 20 times per game? Do they feel that they're more successful and not just because, you know, yeah, well, I'm getting more carries, therefore I'm going to have more yards. I'm talking about yards per carry. You know what I mean?
It's funny. I spoke to Otis Anderson earlier this season on the radio pregame show, and he seemed to indicate rhythm is important when it comes down to the success of a running back.
Right.
That was his perspective, the former Giants running back who was the Super Bowl MVP. He said, hey, the more carries I get, I found during the course of the career, I was a more successful, I was into the game, and so forth. I think everybody's going to have a variety of different opinions. You brought up Orleans Darqua. I remember the Cowboys game, Anita. And if you look at the Cowboys game, he didn't have, you know, 20 carries in that game. He got in for a certain drive. He was very successful, and he got into the end zone. And he was running over Cowboys defenders. But they utilized a variety of different running backs in that game, so that was a limited role where he did thrive. So I don't know if it's clear, cut, and dry where it's you have to give a guy 20 carries in order to have any semblance of continuity and success. We've seen other teams that split up carries, and they do have success. So that's why I'm not going to say when I look back at this season, it was as simple as, well, they finally decided to give Rashad Jennings 15 to 20 carries. I think there were a number of factors, as I touched on right before the last phone call. But that is certainly one of the factors
right. That
played a role into the narrative. Let's head back to the lines. Marv is in Marlboro. I love the alliteration, Marv. What's happening?
I have a few things, like two things to bring up. First is in the draft, if Shaq Lawson and Miles Jack are taken and they don't see a possibility of anybody real worthwhile taking that point in the draft, is there a chance they might look to trade down to a later pick and maybe pick up a Reggie Ragland who isn't worth the 10th pick, but he is worth value, just to recoup? They lost the 7th-round pick for Brad Wing, and, you know, they are going to have to reload through the draft because that's the best way to reload beyond just free agents. And like I said, Reggie Ragland's going to be available. Jalen Smith seems to be dropping in preview drafts because of his injury. And even Shalique Calhoun's available late. Would you see them just trying to get more picks out of that first pick just to help themselves build on, you know, build to the draft? And also, I did have some free agents that I want to bring up to see if you agree with them bringing these free agents in. I was looking at defensive end was Vinnie Curry from the Eagles, which the Giants seem to like him, and the Eagles are now trying to get him back. with Von Miller, I don't think he'll be available because Denver just re-signed Derek Wolfe, so he might get franchise tag. So maybe they should look at Brendan Marshall from Denver, who would be a lot cheaper. And I do agree, Eric Berry should be a Giant because he has the leadership ability and the story behind him to really drive a team. And it seems like a team could get around him because of his story with cancer and comeback.
Yeah, it was an impressive story. I will certainly give you that, what he was able to overcome and the impact that he had for Kansas City's defense. Kansas City was one of the best defensive units in the NFL this season, so that's why he's an appealing player, and he's got the experience factor, as you talked about, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in, Marv. Your first question about the draft and whether or not it's likely that they move down from 10. I think 10 is a very good spot to be in, and I would think that you'd get good value at 10. There's somebody around there that I'm sure the Giants are going to find can come in and make an immediate impact, especially when you look at where the Giants have drafted over the last few years in that 10 to 12 barometer, and whether it be Odell Beckham, whether it be Eric Flowers, those have been players that have come in year one and have certainly, you know, made an impact on this team. I never cross out the chance for a trade. I mean, who saw the Landon Collins trade coming, Anita? You know, and that's very rare where the Giants would pull off a trade. So, I mean, listen, anything's possible to answer your question, Marv. But I would assume when you pick 10th, you feel you could get a good player at 10. You're not going to want to remove yourself from that spot. And here's the other thing when it comes to the draft. Yes, in terms of the mathematics, they don't have a 7th-round pick. It's the Brad Wing trade. But it's not so much the number of picks, Anita. It's the substance of the picks. I think most people would argue it's who you get with the picks, not necessarily did you get 13 guys that you're bringing in the draft class versus 10 guys. It's what you do with those picks more so than the number of those picks.
Absolutely. And I find it amazing. I feel like we were just sitting here, like, what, not too long ago, talking about the draft and talking about the Giants' philosophy when it comes to drafting and their draft board and their draft room. And I will say it again, and that is best player on the board. Best player on the board. Now what I think is going to be really intriguing in this draft is we heard John Mara in the press conference, the end-of-the-year press conference, talk about how the defensive side of the ball is really the side that needs a lot of talent. So maybe is this the year that maybe the best players on the board defensively have a little bit more weight because it's the area, it's the side of the field that's most lacking for the Giants? You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe because there are so many holes to fill on the defensive side of the ball compared to the offensive side of the ball, is this the year that maybe, you know, it's not so much best player on the board, best defensive player on the board, regardless of position?
Well, it's an interesting question, Anita. I would lean towards, I don't think the Giants are going to automatically change their philosophy. I mean, that's been a philosophy that you just alluded to that's been embedded into this franchise, regardless of who the GM is and who the head coach is. It's always, we want to get the most out of that early draft pick,
right?
Which means, hey, using the caller's example, I think the caller had thrown out a few linebackers. If all the linebackers, let's say, that the Giants are interested in at number 10 are off the board in those first 10 picks, if you then say, well, based on what you just threw out, Anita, we need a linebacker, that we're going into the draft, we need a linebacker, but the linebacker now that's at the top of the board is the 5th or 6th ranked linebacker, according to your draft stock. Is it smarter then to take the 5th or 6th best linebacker, or you have somebody at another position who is ranked number 1 or number 2 at that respective position on your board? I mean, that could be a scenario that plays out. But here's the thing. When you're picking 10th, it goes back to you want to get the best player available on the board, the most impactful player, to me, regardless of position, rather than just saying, we've got a need at this position, so let's just take that position. And then that guy doesn't turn out to be nearly as impactful as you anticipated. So right now, until the Giants publicly say anything else, I would think they're leaning towards that philosophy, which is we got to maximize the value at 10,
right?
Which means we take the best player available regardless of the position, the guy we see with the most upside. And here's the other thing, to keep this in mind, at least you got free agency happening before the draft. So if you know you have a lot of financial flexibility, the positions that you think are big, you can prioritize that in free agency.
I mean, that's what's going to be so interesting here is that, you know, because the Giants have a lot of cap space to play with, because there's anticipation that they're going to be big time players in free agency, what we're looking at right now, it's going to be a totally different picture come the end of April when the Giants are on the clock. And so that's really what's going to make this offseason so much fun.
I agree with you, absolutely. In terms of the needs right now, if you were looking at the Giants roster, I mean, we could field calls all show long, and they would tell us, you know, this is who the Giants should take at number 10. Free agency comes along, all of a sudden, you may be singing a different tune depending on what position they target. So that obviously will change the conversation. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Derek in Atlanta. Derek, what's happening?
Hey, hi, Lance, Anita.
How are we doing, Derek?
I'm well. I think with Miles Jack, I think that if the Giants want him, he'll be there at 10. Because I think he's like Chad Thompson, and he's going to fall a little bit because of his multiple positions that he played. That's just one on him. I think that the Giants got to get ready to realize that a lot of our players that we currently have are going to be back, like JT Thomas and some of the people that we're going to put on contract, like Prince Amukamara. Those guys are probably JPP. Those guys are going to be back. The Giants, they got to use a lot of that money on their own players, you know, some of their players.
That's a good point, Derek.
I do see them coming out and, you know, probably snagging up a really good safety and maybe a, you know, linebacker here too. But if history shows, the Giants don't like to go into the draft with needs. So they'll try to do a lot of their work in free agency. But I don't know if it's the free agents that the people are going to want to hear. They're going to be mid-range free agents. And, hopefully we can snag up one guy, but we went after one guy last year, and McCourty, but we just didn't get him. That's on the free agency side. On the draft side, I think we should probably pay attention to this Senior Bowl, because last year in the Senior Bowl, I saw people like Philip Dorsett, Tyler Lockett, coming out of there, and some of the linebackers are going to be starting there. It's probably some of the linebackers that's going to be on our team. Probably linebackers is going to be picked around the second day type of linebackers, and probably not the type of linebackers that people want at number one, like Raglan or Miles Jack. It is going to break what's your Giants philosophy to pick a linebacker that high. So, you know, I just think that we're probably going to go look for a safety or a defensive end or cornerback the first day. And that's all I really got to say.
Well, Derek, appreciate the phone call. And, I mean, I think you brought up a number of good points based on some trends that we've seen.
Do you watch the Senior Bowl? Do you watch it?
Usually watch it. I mean, I don't necessarily sit down and analyze it to the 10th degree because, I mean, my philosophy on the Senior Bowl is it's one part of the evaluation of these draft prospects. You know, you could have a great game in the Senior Bowl, but your entire college season may have not been anything to write home about, or vice versa. So I think you got to use it as part of the equation. But just because a guy stands out in the Senior Bowl doesn't mean that that's a projection of what he's going to do in the NFL.
I know. I understand that. I'm just curious if you tune into that.
Yeah, I'll probably record this game because I don't know if I'm going to be around the television live this weekend when the game's being played. But I'll certainly look over what happened to the game. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it is an important factor in the equation, as Derek just alluded to, because a lot of the guys that are taking part in the game, you're going to hear being called on draft day, whether it be, you know, the first day, the second day, and so forth. But once again, I think that you can't get too caught up in, wow, this kid looked really good in the Senior Bowl, so therefore, you know, that means you insert him into this team, all of a sudden everything's going to go crazy. The one thing that Derek brought up, which I think was very important, and you hear this a lot when you look at NFL free agency, and he mentioned that, you know, just because you have a lot of cap space doesn't mean that you're going to go out and you're going to bring in, let's say, 5 or 6 top-tier free agents. Number one, mathematically, that's just not feasible because you make 1 or 2 signings at the number one ranking at a specific position. That could eat up all your cap space. Most teams that win free agency, Anita, it's very rare that they wind up turning that into a successful season or a Super Bowl season, meaning names alone don't all of a sudden turn seasons around. And what I mean is, look at the Philadelphia Eagles. Philadelphia Eagles, you can argue, based on name, were up there in winning free agency, or winning the offseason, I should say, last year. I mean, think about all the big, prevalent names that they brought in and the trades they made. You'd be like, wow, I mean, these are names. The Ryan Matthews of the world, the DeMarco Murrays of the world. Then they did lose a number of players, too, but that doesn't necessarily always equate to winning football, I guess is what I'm saying. So while it's nice to say let's grab the top safety, the grab the top defensive end, and voila, we'll insert them and everything will work, you know, you do need those middle-tier free agents, and you need, obviously, key draft selections more so than going out and just bringing in all the household names.
Yeah, I think, for me, I never understood the trade with Sam Bradford in regard to the Eagles. To me, that was I really bought into the speculation out there that he was brought in to trade with draft picks
for
so
Mariota.
That Chip Kelly could get Marcus Mariota. So I really bought into that philosophy. Obviously, it didn't happen. So.
And well, a lot of people were certainly speculating about that. It turned out that they weren't able to get Mariota. Tennessee did. They stuck with Sam Bradford. It'll be interesting to see whether or not they re-sign him. But you know, I was using the Eagles not necessarily to say that it worked for them or it didn't work in terms of their scheme. It's just they went out and they attracted names towards them. And the names didn't necessarily click in the way that they anticipated, which means names alone don't all of a sudden win you football games is the point that I'm trying to emphasize here. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Stephanie in West Virginia. Stephanie, what's happening?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
You know, well, Stephanie.
I'm on leave today, you know, carrying out from this stuff. I want to discuss the free agent debate and the psychic dream that I had about the New York Giants draft pick. Well, first of all, I think we need to forget about Von Miller. I think the Broncos going to re-sign him. I mean, he's too much of a value for that team. Now, I do have a list here, spottrack.com, of defensive free agents. I'm not going to go into offensive agents. The only person I put on the offensive free agent is Alshon Jeffrey. But these are my guys. Ed Weddle, Haloti Ngata. Of course, we got re-signed Jason Pierre-Paul. I would consider Muhammad Wilkerson, Brandon Kneebang, Nick Fairley. If we can get Pat Rose from the Redskins, I would consider him. If we can get Alvin Smith, he's a free agent. Bruce Irvin, definitely. And Nick Perry, he's got 53 linebacker from Green Bay, Antonio Smith. Denver probably won't resign him. B.J. Raji. A lot of people have Oliver Vernon. I think he okay.
Olivier Vernon from the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, from the Dolphins. I don't know about him. I would take a chance on this guy, but Carolina probably resign him. Josh Norman. Danny Trevathan.
Well, you threw out a lot of names there, Steph.
She's got them. She's got them all down.
Well, you got.
That's just the name. If y'all ain't got name on, but those are some of my key guys that you know. I tell you who we need to cut off this team: Colin Jenkins, Marcus Coon, and. I think we can let Prince go. Oh, James DeHannibal,
the safety
from Detroit. Like him, too. I would rather have Eric Weddle over Eric Berry because Eric Weddle is frustrated in San Diego. He needs a change of pace. Now, I hate to say this. You know me. I'm still a big Victor Cruz fan. But there are some Giant fans that are sitting around criticizing this man, talking about he's laying on his butt shooting commercials and all that. They don't understand. He had that patella injury. He didn't do anything off the field. He got hurt on the field. Now, that being said, maybe his career as a New York Giant is over. But I'm going to say this now. I know I'm probably going to make all inferior part of this fan base. I think Andre Williams should go. But I think if we can trade Victor Cruz and Andre Williams to the New England Patriots, so Bill Belichick has the ability, when you think a player's career is over due to injury, he got the New England Patriots, period, has the ability to revive a player's career or get the best out of a player, even if there wasn't no good on another team. I think that's what we should do. You know, trade both of them for like a 6 or 7 round pick. And he don't have to be the star receiver with that. He can just be a role-playing receiver. And I think the Patriots fans will appreciate it and all that, you know, considering how Tom Brady, what has gone down. And they need to draft another team. Now, the dream that I had, the first round pick was Jeremy Thompson from Ole Miss, the offensive tackle. Even though the Giants had Ezekiel Elliott and Robert Kenichi on the board, they went before the offensive tackle. Oh, and I was like crying in my sleep. I couldn't believe it. I had to wake up out of dreams. But I do think if he's there, I think we do need a game-changing running back, and we need to draft a quality tight end. The two tight ends in the draft I have in mind is O.J. Howard, that big tight end from Alabama, and Hunter Henry. And that's all I have to say. Thanks for taking my
call.
All
right, Stephanie, appreciate the phone call. Certainly threw out a number of names there at just about every position, it seems, over the NFL landscape. In terms of the running back and the tight end, that was the last two things she said. You know, that she would like to maybe see the Giants address that in the draft. You know, if they want to add some added depth at the running back position in the draft, I don't think there's any harm in that. But, you know, as Anita and I mentioned earlier, I think there's enough options right now on the roster where you don't have to make a big splash in free agency at that position. In terms of the tight end position, you had Larry Donnell, who was injured with the neck injury this past season. You know, Will Tye, who made a name for himself and took advantage of his opportunities. And then Daniel Fells, who unfortunately had his season cut short because of Mercer. There are certainly areas to add some players at that position, like there has been every offseason. The Giants, though, if you look at the trends and the track records, you know, they haven't targeted the draft, Anita, in recent years. And we've discussed this time and time again, but they have not looked at the tight end position in the draft. They've gone the route of undrafted free agents or veteran free agents. It's very rare that you've seen a rookie tight end come in here via the draft. Undrafted is one thing, but, you know, you could throw out all the tight ends you want. I just don't know if that's going to be an area where all of a sudden they turn around and decide we need to look for a young tight end to bring in.
Yeah, and you wonder, at least I wonder, you know, how crucial, how significant is the tight end in this offense, though? You know what I'm saying? And another thing is, because the Giants' offensive line has been struggling the past 2 years, what happens if and when this offensive line really becomes a steady five, a healthy five, a substantial five, and now you don't have to keep the tight end home as maybe as much as they've been doing in the past, or concerns about pass protection, or, you know, once you have a healthy offensive line that could hold their own with five guys, now you can get a lot more creative in regard to how to utilize your tight end. So, you know, Giants haven't had that luxury the past 2 years. So, you know, there's so many question marks in regard to, you know, I mean, I compare the Green Bay Packers offense to this offense, too, because that's where Ben McAdoo came from. But who was it? Richard Rodgers. Richard Rodgers. I mean, he had an okay season.
Respectable season.
But, like,
yeah,
you know, not a huge part of that offense. So, and yeah, let's commend Will Tye in regard to, like, when his number was called, he stepped in, and you saw, and another thing is, you saw the chemistry build between him and Eli Manning to the point where now, when it came to helping out with pass protection, they were having Shane Vereen and Rashad Jennings step up in the backfield and start utilizing Will Tye more as that drop pass, as that third read. So you saw that chemistry develop between him and Eli Manning. I understand that Giants fans want, like, that sexy kind of big name tight end to come in and be a part of this offense. That'd be cool if it happens, but if it doesn't, does it make this offense less successful? I don't think so.
Well, the Giants have had a track record with some of these unknown commodities, you know, the Jake Ballards of the world, the Kevin Bosses of the world, and they've turned in to become productive players. I would say I think the tight end is an important aspect of this offense. And the reason why I think the tight end is an important aspect of this offense, because if you're getting rid of the football quicker, as we've seen over the last 2 years with Eli Manning, the tight ends run a lot of those intermediate routes. And it's important to have a presence in the middle of the field, which we saw with Will Tye. So you need a tight end. It doesn't mean you need the Jason Wittens of the world, the Antonio Gates, the Gronkowskis. Don't get me wrong. I would agree with you. You don't need that to be successful. But you want a reliable option that's going to stay healthy and can build that chemistry with Eli Manning. Will Tye, I think, deserves an opportunity to be back in that conversation if they want to add some more depth There's no crime in that. Larry Donnell had success the previous season. So they've gotten production out of these tight ends, but they want to have that as a continual security blanket, because if the wide receivers are not necessarily getting the open opportunities down the field, you need the Shane Vereens and the tight ends to make up for that in the middle of the field, and we saw that at times. So I would say it's extremely important. Let's close out the show with one last phone call. Dave's been waiting in Manhattan. Dave, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Dave. What do you have for us?
Well, I wanted to touch upon what Anita talked about a little bit. I think that one of the biggest problems the Giants have, when I look at the overall picture of the team, is they don't have it at the line of scrimmage, the offensive line and defensive line. The defensive line is obvious, but, you know, specifically the right side. I wanted to ask you, what do the Giants have plans for with Will Beatty and Jeff Schwartz? Do you know what their plans are with those two guys?
Well, I mean, right now, Will Beatty, he spoke to the media. He says that he'll expect to be ready for those spring workouts in terms of him coming off the injury. Will Beatty's under contract. So, I mean, right now, he's on the roster until the Giants perhaps make a move or whatever they want to do. And the same thing with Jeff Schwartz. He's under contract, too. So, I mean, as it stands right now, they're both part of that 53-man roster. What happens in the next few weeks in free agency remains to be seen. But as it stands right now, to answer your question, Dave, they're a part of this roster because they're under contracts. There's really no decisions that have to be made.
Okay. Because, you know, they haven't been healthy for the past couple years, and there's not been a lot of depth on that O-line. And if those one of those two guys go down, I'm confident in Richburg and the left side, you know, but those two guys on the right side, you know, Marshall Newhouse, I don't know why he was really brought aboard, but...
Well, he was brought in to be a backup. Keep that in mind, Dave. Remember,
yeah,
you know, the Will Beatty injury threw a curveball. It was going to be Beatty and Eric Flowers as your two tackles. Then he goes down, so obviously the next guy in the depth chart has to step up and start. I don't really think that that was a surprise. That's what happens when you deal with injuries. And don't forget, Bobby Hart had a very nice end of his rookie season. So don't eliminate him from the equation on the right side.
Yeah. I just like to see the Giants get back to running the ball, being physical at the line of scrimmage. And I know this is a West Coast offense now, but, you know, when it becomes third and two, third and three, I like to be able to see them get the first down and, you know, the defense could see it coming, but they could still get that first down because what it does, it gives your defense rest. Less injuries happen, and especially with the, you know, the rookies that they have on this team, it's very difficult to build through the draft with rookies in the defense. You really need some experienced guys back there. So I really hope that Jerry Reese finds some pretty good, you know, I like the Eric Berry, which you guys talked about, you know, but he's going to be really sought after. You know, it'll be hard for the Giants to pick him up, but, you know, they really need a free safety with good cover skills and speed, you know, that can really help out those corners. And a good middle linebacker, you know, experienced guy. What is the plan with John Beeson? Is he still in the contract too?
Beeson's under contract, yeah.
He is. John Beeson is going to have surgery, or he's had it already, and he's going to see how his knee responds and then make a decision whether or not he's going to retire. But I will tell you, I've had him on my radio show here on ESPN New York several times, and he loves this organization. He loves the Giants. And he doesn't want to play anywhere else. So if the Giants, if he's ready to go, he feels his knee's responding properly. He would love to come back and be a Giant if the Giants will have him.
That's not a problem. I just think that I like Jasper Brinkley. I think he played really well for an undrafted guy. So did Wanyunga. But they, you know, hopefully one of those guys can really step up next year, because I don't know if Beeson's going to be playing all 16 games. So they're going to need some youthful guys. If Beeson wants to mentor one of those guys, but it would be nice if they get some, you know. Because the linebackers were playing well the first few games, and then the injuries started to hit, and then there was just not enough depth on the team. And, you know, and if you can't run the ball, those quarterbacks are just going to pick you apart all day, you know, on that back end, and that's basically what happened. And Tom Coughlin really couldn't – he didn't know who to trust. He couldn't trust the offense one game. He couldn't trust the defense the next game. And he seemed like he was just trying to find something he can trust. And he just – you know, and I felt bad for him. But that's all I wanted to say. Just, you know, I really hope that, you know, Jerry Reese does well in this draft and some of the free agency and really gets it going at the line of scrimmage. Because if you look at the teams in the playoffs every year, it's teams with good line of scrimmage. You know, the physical at the line of scrimmage, Seattle. You look at these Panthers now with Dave Gettleman being over there. You know, they're really physical teams. I like to see the Giants get back to that. But that's all I wanted to say, guys. Thank you very much.
Hi, Dave. Appreciate the phone call.
I know we're about to end the show, but just to piggyback off of what you said, you know, I think Giants fans should be, at least I'm excited about what potentially could come of this offensive line. You know what I mean? Because obviously this is an offensive line that the Giants have started to really pay attention to with Richburg, with Justin Pugh and Eric Flowers. I mean, you know, you've got three of the five, and Bobby Hart, I think, impressed the heck out of a lot of us. So now if he can build off the season he had, now you've got four of the five, you know, and who knows what happens with Beattie. I think there should be a lot of optimism and a lot of excitement in regard to how good this offensive line could be going into this next coming season.
Well, there was a lot of improvement in terms of pass protection this season, in terms of the sacks allowed. So, I mean, I think they made strides despite all the injuries in that department. And a little bit more depth, guys staying healthy, I don't see why they can't continue the progression of improvement. I certainly think that there's some signs of that. And as far as the defense is concerned, as the last caller, Dave, weighed in, yeah, I mean, you could bring back some of these players, but I think that the Giants realize, you know, depth is an important piece of the equation to have insurance policies in case players go down. You know, we talked about earlier in the show, Anita, the fact that the secondary had a lot of configurations. I would make the same argument in terms of the linebackers. I mean, how many times did the Giants go into a game this year and had the same three linebackers start in consecutive weeks? I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I, with full confidence, can say that that didn't happen very often, maybe once or twice. So that's more of a reason why you got to have insurance policies in depth to prepare for in case some guys get banged up. I know we're running a little bit late, but there are a few people that weighed in on Twitter. I just want to get through one or two tweets, and then we'll obviously wrap up shop here on a variety of different topics. In terms of a variety of things that we could get into via Twitter, let's weigh in. Here's Samantha. She has a question about Tom Coughlin. At Donito Samantha, I read Tom Coughlin will be taking a year off from coaching, coming back in 2017. Have you heard about perhaps him consulting for us, which is something that obviously John Mara brought up in his last season press conference?
Right. I haven't heard anything. I think it's going to be really interesting. I love when Tom Coughlin in that press conference said, you know, so Judy doesn't want me in the house. His wife, who she's absolutely fantastic. Think about a guy like Tom Coughlin, who's all he's done, all he knows is just coaching. And when you're coaching, you're not home that often. You know, I mean, what a change in that house in regard to Tom being around and being home and being with his family. I think it's going to be really interesting to see if he does get back into coaching in 2017. If he is really going to have a year off to be home and gel with the family and spend time with the grandchildren, how hard is that going
to
be? You know, it's kind of like
from that.
It's kind of like Bill Cowher, right? Bill Cowher, like when he left the Steelers, the thought was, oh, he'll go in the booth for a year, and then he'll get back into coaching. He loves New York City. He loves living in New York City. He loves working for CBS. Do you know what I mean? Same thing with John Gruden. But
the difference isn't either those two that you just named. They have a fall. They're still around the game, and that fills up a big part of their life.
I wouldn't be surprised if Tom starts doing some broadcasting.
Anything's possible. Could do consulting. Could coach in college too. Don't cross that off the list as well. I think there's a variety of things that could come into play. I think he's going to be connected to the game in some capacity. That's what I would say. As far as the Giants connection, I think that remains to be seen. There hasn't been any new news on that front in terms of whether or not he's going to take an official consulting job that John Mara presented. Let's get to one or two more tweets here. AJ Marshall, AJ Marshall 3. Number one priority for the Giants this offseason on offense, depth on the offensive line. That is something that obviously we addressed throughout the course of this program. Donald at Tag Rocket. Draft Ezekiel Elliott, the running back for Ohio State, and spend on two defenders, then draft speed with all remaining rounds. So speed and spending, the alliteration being thrown out there. As far as Ezekiel Elliott is concerned, you know, he may wind up in round number one, and I said this earlier in the week. Personally, this is just my opinion, I wouldn't take a running back in the first round given the injury rate of that position. So, you know, Elliott falls, I could see that maybe, but not if he's in the first round.
But look at the difference that what's his name made for the Rams?
Todd Gurley? Yeah. But look at also the other issues that they had on that team, too.
Man.
Let's not forget about that.
That kid's good.
He's good. And Ezekiel Elliott, I'm sure, is going to be a good pro. But remember, there's other aspects of a team other than just the running back position, especially when you look at the roster and you have some options, at least currently on the roster. I think that, you know, you got to prioritize. That's the key thing here. And then a number of people brought up a few people. I don't want to necessarily name all the tweets because there were a number of you that said, you know, listen, Eric Berry, Von Miller, you got to weigh also whether or not they're going to return to their respective teams, because I'm sure Kansas City and Denver are going to want to re-sign both of those players, especially how productive they've been. So we'll be interested to see who's going to be on the market at the early stages of free agency, because obviously
when does it kick off?
Kicks off right at the beginning of March.
That's going to be fun.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Well, first you got to get through the Super Bowl, then you got to get through obviously
the combine,
and then obviously we have the draft. There's an event pretty much just about every week, it seems, in a very busy off season. And Big Blue Kickoff Live will be with you each and every weekday.
You and I, we didn't even spend 1 minute on talking about the Super Bowl.
Well, we got plenty of time.
So we're back tomorrow.
Correct.
We're back tomorrow.
Yes,
right?
And tonight will be the draft for the Pro Bowl, so we'll know who Odell Beckham and company are going to be selecting for their respective team.
So we'll have that to talk about,
correct,
and then at least spend like maybe just a minute. I'm curious who you think's going to win.
Yeah, we could certainly get into that, and
okay,
then we'll wind up repeating ourselves next week too, because we've got some time, Anita. Last time I checked, we got another week, so we will certainly get into that. We want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Also, in terms of teasing for tomorrow's program, we'll be ranking the top 10 television shows that Anita and I have watched over the course of our lifetime. So
really?
Stay tuned for that.
I'll do. I'm in. I'm game
Some
for
of
that.
My teases, I should mention, don't necessarily come true and come to fruition. Keep that in mind. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
He's got through. 35.